And now, the hosts of Surge Baseball and Beyond, Cookie Rojas and Tim Grubbs.
Welcome back, fans, to another episode of Surge Baseball and Beyond. I'm your host, Cookie Rojas, and I'm joined in our virtual studio by none other than the voice of the Wichita Wind Surge, Mr. Tim Grubbs. How's it going, Tim?
Oh, it's going great, Cookie, I guess as well as it can be. And just it's a rainy day here in Wichita today, so just enjoying all the rain coming down outside.
Absolutely. I have a little dog, and if he doesn't get his at least one walk in, and so I got up and I was, you know, doing some stuff online, and then I noticed there was a break in the rain. So I quickly got him all dressed up in his gear and stuff and ready to go, and we just finished a quick walk. Otherwise, he'll drive me crazy right before it started raining again. So I hear you. It's going to be one of those days.
I'm right with you, because Winnie's the same way. You know what I mean? I've been able to get her out there today. You know, she's our little beagle, so she loves her little walks, and she's been spoiled the last month.
Oh, it's been really nice. It's been really nice. A lot of walks, a lot of extra walks, you know. This guy, too, Miles, has been having a great time. So how goes the COVID-19 battle at Casa Grubbs?
Oh, I guess it's going okay. It's getting old. You know what I mean? We're, about a month into this. So, we moved here in September, and there were some things I did right away. Mm-hmm. And then there were a lot of projects I kind of put on the back order. You know what I mean? I did a few things over the holidays, and you know, I'm cruising through a lot of them, but I'm really running out. Like, wow. How many times can you clean the garage? You know, how many times can you mow the lawn? You know, I mean, I'm chipping away at all the stuff, but I'm really running out. So,
well, I got the opposite problem here. I moved in here at the end of September into a nice apartment, right on College Hill. Hadn't had to do anything on the actual building, but my wife has got the bug. She wants to buy a house. And so she has set up a couple of viewings that we've gone to look at. And it's kind of weird because you pull up and then you put your mask on and then you walk into the building and they hold the door open for you. And the realtor is there. They've got a mask on as well. And they basically, they let you just walk through the house without really explaining much because of social distancing. So it's really been a weird experience doing that and just trying to be able to figure out and navigate this whole world. But I mean, the one thing that I think you and I have enjoyed during this is we've continued to watch Ozarks, right? But you've passed me. I have fallen off the waist. Not that I'm not interested in the show. I love the show, but just been one of the things that's been hilarious in my house is I mentioned in a previous podcast is my daughter came out for spring break and she's been with us. And one of the things that she wants to get through is America's Next Top Model. So I will tell you right now, we have gone through, I don't know how many seasons of this, because it's a way for us just to all sit together and then be able just to laugh and have a good time seeing all these things. And I have never seen an episode until my daughter came here. And I've seen, I think, three seasons already. We killed a season last night. And you start getting into it. You start saying, this girl, what is she doing with her hands? This is a terrible pose. Like, I don't understand fashion. I guess my world of fashion is literally maybe just looking at a catalog or a Sears catalog. And then you see the world of high fashion with the makeup and all the other locations and the hair. And I have to admit, in Casa Rojas, during this COVID-19, the makeover episode of America's Next Top Model has been our favorite. But the other thing that has kept me in check has been my sons, because they reminded me wholeheartedly not to forget that the Michael Jordan documentary, Last Dance, the Chicago Bulls. Have you had a chance to see it?
Yeah, I've seen it. You know, my wife's even locked in on it because, you know, she's not a huge sports fan. She's a football fan. She does like sports, you know, but she grew up in Iowa, you know, back in that era, you know, and the Chicago Bulls were a social thing more than just, just an NBA team.
True.
So, yeah, we've watched it. We've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I had a chance. I was going back and forth with my oldest son, Nick, and while the documentary was going on. He does work for Providence College, and he really gets into sports documentaries and the camera and the music. There was one thing that was amazing. The game where Michael Jordan dropped 63 points in game two against the Boston Celtics with four future Hall of Famers on that team. There was a musical sequence that they had in there that was unbelievable. I'm Bad by LL Cool J with Michael Jordan just going off. It's such a great documentary. So that I'm looking forward to it. I literally would have been willing to stay up all night and just continue to watch them all. But I guess they're only giving us, what, two every Sunday? Is that
two
how that
a week.
Works?
Yeah, two yeah a I think week. Is what it is. I do remember that game. I remember it really well. That
oh, me too. Yeah,
that Celtics Bulls game, and yep. You know, because I was a Bulls fan for a while. You know what I mean? I jumped on that MJ bandwagon at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of bailed. You know, I didn't root for them. I guess during the second three championships, but gotcha. You know, the early years I did because I you know. Just at that age, you know, it was such a big deal. You know, he was such a huge deal. And then, you know, I switched to a Knicks fan. And, you know, at that point,
I was going to ask you, what other team? Yeah. What team did you cheer for?
I rooted for the Knicks. And still, in fact, I still do. It's really the only team in my life I've ever picked. You know,
wow. Yeah, because Pittsburgh doesn't have, yeah.
And growing up in Pittsburgh, I was born a Steelers fan, a Pirates fan, a Pitt Panther fan, a Pittsburgh Penguins fan. So really, the one team that I've picked in my life was the NBA, and I picked the New York Knicks. I saw Patrick Ewing play for Georgetown.
Wow.
My dad took me to the Pitt-Georgetown game. You know, I remember it was my first college game when Ewing was a senior, and then I kind of just I thought that Georgetown team was impressive, and when he went to the Knicks, I just kind of followed him to New York.
Well, that makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. I was always fascinated by Georgetown with Coach Thompson, and then seeing Patrick Ewing wearing the T-shirt underneath, which just kind of stuck out to me as a kid, seeing that. Like, why is he? I don't know. But obviously, because I'm from New England, I can never, ever, ever, unlike our general manager who you interviewed last week, I can never, ever be a New York fan on any level whatsoever. So if I've alienated any of our listeners, I'm sorry. I can't do it.
It's the only New York team I root for. But, you know, there was a brief period I rooted for the Mets because I worked for the Mets affiliate. But other than that, I've always, you know, not really been a New York fan at all.
I had an opportunity. This is going to be kind of crazy. Early in my career, when I started working for the Pawtucket Red Sox, there was, LinkedIn had just started and whatnot. And there was an opportunity that came up to do sales for the New York Yankees in New York. And I had contemplated, like, you know, doing that. And I sent in my resume and I got an email back saying, hey, we'd love to talk to you a little bit about it. And I went home and I talked to my wife and my kids. And I swear my kids looked at me at dinner like, you traitor. Like, how could you ever... I could tell by that look. And so I emailed them back and I said, you know, I respectfully withdraw my name for consideration for the position. But that's
what's
story.
Funny. Yeah. That's what's really funny about our job. If we worked for Bank of America or for Wells Fargo or something, you would never, you know, it would just be a business decision. But because you work for sports teams.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I couldn't ever see myself wearing any of their gear or my kids breaking their hearts. You know, I don't know. I just couldn't do it when I saw their faces. So I withdrew. But that was a time, like I said, I was working for the Pawtucket Red Sox at the time. And one of the things that just came up on my Twitter feed was the fact that I had totally forgotten that we had celebrated the 30th, I think, no, it was the anniversary. I forgot what the year was, of the longest game of the Pawtucket Red Sox, the longest game in minor league baseball, longest game in baseball history.
Yeah, no, that just happened. I saw it on Twitter
40th.
The other day.
Yeah.
It was what year was it? You guys played 33 innings.
33 innings. Yeah.
Pawtucket and Rochester. Yep. You know what's funny is I was involved in the longest PCL game.
Wow.
Which was 24 innings. But what's amazing to me is the time of the game of our 24 inning game, New Orleans and Nashville, was 8 minutes shorter than your game, which your game had 9 innings more.
Wow. So the time difference is only that little? That's it?
It's eight minutes.
Wow. That's,
you know, we played 24 innings. And it was, it just took forever.
Yeah.
And it took 2 days. Very similar. A lot of the similarities between the two games. Obviously, the innings is much different.
Right.
But, there's a lot of similarities. And it just the game dragged. But, you know, what got funny is when you got to like innings numbers 22 and 23, I remember, you know, the inning would end. I was on the road. This game happened in Nashville.
In Nashville, okay.
In 2006. It was on Cinco de Mayo, 2006. And we would go into the press box in between innings when commercial was on, and we would just laugh. And yeah. I remember thinking, let's go break the record. You know what I mean? I was like, let's play 34 and break that record.
I was thinking about that. Like, if you were going to were gunning for it, or if you were just hoping like the thing would end. At that point, you must have been like, let's just go for it. I mean, this is, you know, we're this far into it. Let's just go. Did they end up using positional players to pitch in that game?
Yeah, we used positional players. Yeah. In fact, one of our pitchers – scored the winning run as the right fielder.
Oh, wow.
He was a pitcher and then stayed in the game to play right field. And then he got on base. I think he got a hit and then scored what ultimately was the go-ahead run in the top of the 24th, and we held on to win it. So
the Zephyrs won the longest game in the PCL. Wow. That's unbelievable. Yeah, I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah, no, so it was a long time ago, but it was fun, and you know, there wasn't anybody there. The most amazing thing about it, and you'll appreciate this. So the game started on a Friday. They called the game, you know, we suspended it after 18 innings at 1 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. And it was a fireworks Friday at the old stadium in Nashville. They launched the fireworks.
Oh, did they really?
I mean, it was a bad neighborhood where there, you know, you would hear the occasional gunfire. So to launch fireworks at 1 o'clock in the morning in front of dozens, like, I'm not even sure if I should make that plural. I don't think there was more than like 20 people there.
Well, the thing about the longest game in Pawtucket was it really transformed that organization. I mean, Lou, our managing partner here in Wichita, was on that staff, that full-time staff. There were only three full-time people at that time. It was only Ben, the owner, Mike, the general manager, and Lou, the assistant general manager. And one of the things you learn, and I grew up in Pawtucket. I remember the game because I lived only blocks away from the stadium as a kid growing up. I didn't go to it. But it's funny because people in Rhode Island or New England will say, oh, I was at the longest game. Well, in reality, there were only maybe a handful of people. It was a cold, raw April, Easter weekend. So the game started on Good Friday. The game started on Holy Saturday. And so, you know, it was cold. It was only a few people in the ballpark. And when the game concluded, I believe there was only about 16 total people left in the stands at the end of the 32nd inning. And then, as you know, the story goes, they had to wait until Rochester came back in June to complete that game, and it only lasted an inning, but it was a sold-out ballpark. So technically, there were a lot of people who were there for the end of the longest game in baseball history, but not for the beginning of the longest game in baseball history.
No, that's true. We did it back-to-back day. You know, we played on May 5th, which was the first game of a series, then had to pick up the conclusion on May 6th. My favorite memory, and it links to your story and why it was so important to Pawtucket. You guys had a book written about it.
Yeah.
It was somebody that worked in, somebody worked in the press box in Nashville, a game day employee. When he came back to the ballpark the second day, that Saturday, he brought a souvenir cup, you know, but he had a Coke in that was from, you know, he wasn't at that game, but he had been to McCoy Stadium at some point in his life, kept the cup as a souvenir. He brought it to the ballpark and says, this is what we're shooting for.
Oh, my God. That, I have that cup. I know exactly what you're talking about. It was a great marketing showpiece is that cup. We had that cup for years in the ballpark because it wraps around from, has the scoreboard from one side of the cup all the way around to the other side of the cup, 33 innings. And we had just an unbelievable display, and Lou and Ben and Mike saved so much history of that game that it was in our hallway. Like, we had a walk of fame at the ballpark that was just phenomenal. And I would give tours all the time of that. And the funny story, and then we'll move on, was Cal Ripken played in that game. We had two Hall of Famers play that game, Wade Boggs and Cal Ripken. And I'll remember that Cal Ripken was in Pawtucket for a Cal Ripken League event that we had at the ballpark early in the day before a regular game. And so we had a bunch of Cal Ripken kids who played baseball for Cal Ripken on the field waiting for Cal Ripken to make an appearance. And it was courtesy of some of our local officials who were able to get Cal to come to town and whatnot. And I had the pleasure of bringing Cal from the car into the ballpark and onto the field. And as we walked into the office, we walked by the big display that had the game. It had pictures of Cal and Wade Boggs and all that. And he stopped and he looked at that and he shook his head and then he walked away. And then under his breath, I can't say the expletive, but he was like, "I hate that bleeping game." And I started laughing and I was just like, "I'm sorry." And he looked at me and I said, "Why do you hate that game?" He goes, "That killed my batting average."
Oh, wow.
Because I guess what happened was, he batted X amount of times in that game, and obviously no one really did anything in that game, but the final results of your at-bats weren't tabulated until the game concluded in June, and he was having a great season, and all of a sudden your batting average drops precipitously because you have a bunch of over, you know, at-bats that you had in that game. And so that's why he hated that game. I thought it was funny. I was like, I had never seen anyone, and Wade Boggs subsequently had come to the ballpark too and seen the display, and it really changed the trajectory of that franchise in Pawtucket. In Nashville, did they honor anything or have anything like that about the longest game?
The only thing that I remember, and for years, they had a page in their media guide dedicated to that game. Hmm. And it was on their website too. I think it was on their website until they moved into the new ballpark. But they had, you know, if you went to NashvilleSounds.com and you looked at, you know, it had like team history, and it had like, it was actually like a subheading on the website of all the record. It's still, that game holds a lot of PCL records. Wow. You know, when you start playing, we played a 16 inning game a couple years ago, which was the year before we changed the rules, you know, where we play with the new extra inning rules. And I remember I started referencing the record book and I'd be like, "We're not going to catch any of the," you know what I mean? Right. That 24 inning game has like how many at bats, you know, all those milestones are going to be tough to ever. And now with the new rules, you know, you hate to say a record is safe, but I don't think any game will ever be that long in the PCL ever again.
Yeah,
just
no,
because
I agree.
The way things are.
For the fans that are here in Wichita listening to us throughout the area and the region who may not know the rules that went into effect a couple years ago, can you just let the fans know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, yeah, because we do have different rules in the major leagues. When a game goes to extra innings, they put the runner at second base for both teams. So essentially, since they started that a few years ago, I think we're three – this would have been the third year into that rule – we have never gotten – the New Orleans team, which is the franchise here now in Wichita, has never gone beyond the 11th inning. Hmm. So usually it's done in the 10th. You know, usually right. Somebody score – if the top inning – the top team doesn't score, the bottom of the inning, you usually bunt the guy over to third, and then there's usually a sacrifice fly or right. base hit ends it. It usually ends pretty quick. Yeah. It doesn't seem like it would end that quick. You know, when they first started it, I was like, both teams put a runner at second base. Like, this could easily continue to go.
Keep going, right. That's exactly what I thought, yeah.
But now that I've seen it in action, and I've probably, you know, I've seen a bunch of games, it really does end pretty quick. Usually two or three extra innings tops, but most games end in the 10th.
Yeah. And just so fans know, when the runner is on second base, how does that impact the pitcher?
Oh, like he doesn't, that's an unearned run.
An unearned run.
If it does score. Okay. And who that runner is, it's the last batter from the ninth, from the previous inning. Now, they did make a modification after the first year. The first year we had that, it was the final batter. Mm-hmm. But then after the first year, they changed it to, it's the final batter as long as it's not the pitcher. So in our National League games, because they had a pitcher get hurt, going to play second base, he pulled a hamstring coming around third. And I think they realized, okay, you know, that's, we can do the previous batter. You know, you can do the eighth guy, but it does alter, you know, double switches. It does affect different things like that. Cause you want to make sure you stay clear of that. Right. But I like it now. I mean, I'm a traditionalist for the most part, but now that we have it in our rules, you know, I kind of like it, you know that, especially if it's a fireworks night, that, you know, I was involved in a lot of fireworks nights, home or away, that, you know, you families, they're here for the fireworks, not necessarily the baseball.
Right.
And, you know, all of a sudden you play a 16 inning game and the game doesn't get over till 2 a.m.
Right.
You know, you feel bad because the people missed out on their fireworks show. Yeah. So I think a lot of ways there's some real good benefits with it. Plus it helps. The main reason is it helps with pitching, you know, especially at the minor league level, you don't have enough pitching to go that deep into a night.
Right. You're not using those positional players now who are might get hurt. You know what I mean? You don't know. So I too, when I heard of the rule, I was just like, this just makes no sense to me. But then seeing it in action, yeah, I've gotten used to it. I kind of like it. I think the fans enjoy it. It brings a heightened sense of awareness going into the extra innings. There's already a man on second now. And for the managers, I've spoken to a few of the strategies. You know, you hope that you're able to get the guy over, you know, just by laying a bunt down. So now you see a lot of guys in BP laying down bunts over and over and over again to try to, if you're in that situation, just to advance the runner. So it's definitely been something that the fans will enjoy seeing once we do get some baseball here. So just want to remind the folks that are listening, you know, we're still not sure. We're still waiting to hear what, you know, is going to happen once we get out of this. And hopefully we'll be able to play some baseball here again. The stadium is absolutely spectacular. I was there just yesterday. I had to go into the trailers to do some things and got a chance to walk around the park and saw it. And I was just blown away at how beautiful it has. It's gone from being literally a pile of dirt to this beautiful cathedral, just awaiting its congregation. So I did this. We did a little switcheroo this week, Tim. I had an opportunity to interview our senior vice president, Annie Life, and that'll be coming up right after this. Who's our senior vice president of community relations. So I know,
oh, that's great.
I know fans will have an opportunity to hear from Annie and some of the things that we've done already during this pandemic. And I think next week we're going to continue this series of introducing all our staff members to the public, and either myself or you will be interviewing our next person. And I think once we're done with post-production, we'll figure out who that next person is going to be.
Yeah, no, that sounds great. I mean, Annie's a great person, and I'm glad that you were able to talk to her. She's been, what a life, you know, a nurse and then working in baseball, and she's been kind of in and out of baseball. So I'm glad. I've known her for a few years. She worked, you know, remotely with that New Orleans franchise, and I'm glad that she's here in Wichita full time.
Absolutely. So I have a couple things I have to catch up with you, Tim. I have to catch up on Ozarks. But other than that, we'll get together virtually sometime next week, and we'll record episode number 5.
That sounds great. Yeah, we're chipping away 3 or 4 Ozarks a day. So I would imagine by the time we tape again, we're probably done.
Challenge accepted. Challenge accepted. All right, brother. Great talking to you. All right, we'll talk soon.
Great.
Hey, fans, I'm joined on this virtual studio right now with our Senior Vice President of Community Relations, Ms. Annie Life. Annie, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Cookie. And it's nice that everybody's tuned in.
It is. It's really cool that we're able to do this, especially in these uncertain times that we're, you know, Annie, you know, you were in the trailer right next to the trailer that I was in, and we're all working together. Then the next thing you know, we're doing this podcast remotely. So thankfully for this technology, but I think it's a good time that we launch this podcast because we have an opportunity to connect with fans who are looking for content right now. And I think getting to know people on our staff, I think, is important to some folks. So I just want to ask you a couple of questions today and let our fans get to know you a little bit. Where exactly are you from, Annie?
Well, I originated in Newark, New Jersey, very long time ago.
Okay. So from New England, from URI, we would always say, when someone said New Jersey, we'd say, what exit? So I don't know if people get that joke or not, but definitely on the East Coast, people are like, okay, well, what exit are you in?
Yeah.
So, so you're from Jersey originally.
Yep, and down in Newark. Yep.
Oh, okay. Now, you and I learned, we've worked together for a while, but I learned a lot of things about you. And one of the things that I was fascinated was your baseball abilities. You had an interesting baseball path. In terms of you actually played baseball at a time when most girls didn't play baseball.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I would say that I actually got to play, but I got to play on the back end of it. And reason for that is, well, growing up in Newark, New Jersey, we'd go to visit my grandmother. And she would always have a baseball game on it, you know, and we'd sit there and we'd watch it. She had probably one of the first color TVs that ever came out. Oh, and wow. So it was really cool watching it. I became a Boston Red Sox fan back
really?
In the day. Yeah.
And
yep. And probably the only kid in New Jersey that was a Boston Red Sox fan.
I would say so. Very rare indeed.
Yeah.
It's, And you actually you played the game though.
That's one I of
the
did. That, yeah.
Yeah.
My love for baseball started when I was a kid, and when I got to high school, I was definitely an athlete. I participated mm-hmm. wherever I could, whatever season was open, I was there, mm-hmm. and always wanted to play baseball. And so, in my senior year, I decided to try out for the team, and it was great. I maybe was not one of the most talented players, but mm-hmm. I had enough talent to make the team. And wow. I think the coach saw that there was a real potential for growth there if I played. And wow. so unfortunately, time-wise, it was a little bit too early for girls to be playing boys baseball or boys sports of any sort. Yeah. And Title IX didn't come into effect until 2 years later. Wow. I got called into the coach's office before we even had our first game. And, you know, he gave me the bad news. He said, you can't suit up. You can't go on the field. It's just not allowed. It was heartbreaking. Crazy. But I still got to stay with the team throughout the entire season. Wow. I kept score. I definitely worked out. I shagged balls with the guys and
wow.
got a few hits in myself, and it was great.
That's unbelievable. Crazy. Just totally different times, you know, you see with the advancement of women's sports and girls playing all kinds of sports nowadays. And yeah, I guess in essence, you were a pioneer without even knowing it.
Without knowing it, believe me.
So you're in Jersey, and you ended up working for the team that I ended up working for years later, the Pawtucket Red Sox. How did that happen?
Yeah, well, I started, I went to college at Penn State, majoring in phys ed at the time. You know, like most kids right out of high school, you really don't know what you want to do. Mm. And because I was such an athlete, I just thought that was the route that I wanted to go. Ultimately ended up moving to Rhode Island and started working with the Paw Sox, selling tickets, delivering tickets, and that was back in the day. We didn't have tickets.com. We didn't have anything like that. I remember just going in and getting this big box of pink tickets, rubber banded together, and go out, deliver them, or, you know, try to sell them.
I remember that. That old box office in the tower where they would just sit there and open it up, and they'd have all the tickets slotted by game dates. You know,
you
I remember that,
right. that.
Yeah, wow, that's unbelievable. And so, you ended up working with the Paw Sox. You ended up meeting Lou Schweckheimer, who's the managing partner of the Wichita Wind Surge. And how did you end up involved with the team here?
Well, Lou and I worked together for a few years in Pawtucket. And then I went into healthcare, which was another one of my passions, and raised a family. And then about 6 years ago, got a phone call. Just always stayed in touch with my baseball family. Mm-hmm. And got a phone call from Lou and said, would I have interest in returning to baseball? And didn't have to twist my arm too hard.
Wow.
So it was right just as he was leaving Pawtucket, and we were putting together the group to, you know, we bought Port Charlotte, the single A club for the Tampa Bay Rays, and then followed by New Orleans, and got involved in the rebranding of New Orleans. I did.
That was fun.
Yeah.
We were both involved in that.
Yes,
that,
we
that
were.
That was a lot of fun. Absolutely. Well, that's
and
interesting.
And that's where it came. You know, and then the next thing I know, we get the call saying, you know, there's interest in Wichita. And it was like, well, this is interesting. So that's how we all ended up here.
And right now you're in a great position. You are our Senior Vice President of Community Relations, and you have such an amazing background, both your baseball background, your medical background. You've lived in different parts of the country. Mm-hmm. And you're doing community relations, and one of the things that you and our assistant GM, Bob Millett, got together, and you put together this really great campaign for the entire region. Can you tell our fans a little bit about the genesis of that and the t-shirt concept?
Sure. The t-shirt was actually supposed to be the shirt that we were going to use for opening week in Wichita. obviously that didn't happen. And we all, you know, we had a great desire to do something in the community for the community throughout this crisis. And just keeping the fans involved and knowing how hard it is because everybody is in this together, you know.
Right.
And although opening day didn't happen, at least mm-hmm. when it was scheduled to happen, mm-hmm. We started thinking of ways that we could give back to the community. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of the other clubs in minor league ball were opening up their concessions and they were making lunches and dinners for right. for the communities. And we didn't have that luxury because our kitchens, our concessions were not quite ready yet.
Right, right.
So we were put in kind of a challenging position to, mm-hmm. you know, Bob did a heck of a job with the rest of the crew on, you know, doing things on the website to keep the kids involved. The coloring pages, the educational, the math, and things, you know, of that sort. We had the cooking little segments mm-hmm. on to keep people involved and the reading corner. And mm-hmm. so we decided that in partnership with Western Associates, we would take the opening day shirt, the opening week shirt, alter it a little bit, and just show Wichita that... you know, we're here. We're here for you. We're yeah. here with you. And mm-hmm. that's how we, you know, we did some research and found the Wichita Community Foundation. And mm-hmm. they had a program called Stand with Wichita, which was an emergency COVID-19 fund. Mm. And we just thought that that was a heck of a way to give back to the community. So in essence, that's what we did, and we yeah. still have shirts available. We are well over the $25,000 mark right now.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yes,
that's amazing.
And many thanks to our partner, Emprise Bank, mm-hmm. Who purchased 500 shirts, which brought their donation up to $10,000.
Wow.
And thank you so much to this community. This has just been amazing. The response has been unbelievable. Yeah. And... it's just, you know, the shirts are still flying off the shelves, basically. Yeah.
And where can fans get it, just if they haven't gotten one yet? I know my wife got hers, and she showed me, hey, I got mine.
Yeah.
where can they get it? That's what
you
I want.
You can go to the website. That's thewindsurge.com. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. under the community tab, and you'll see the community donation, the Wichita Community Foundation tab, mm-hmm. and click on that, and it brings the shirt up. You can put your orders in. We're going to start filling the orders, actually, this mm-hmm. week.
Oh, wow.
And
great.
So people can start expecting their shirts this week.
That's awesome. Well, I mean, for a situation, you're right. I mean, we were not in a position because of the stadium construction and all the things that go with getting concessions ready. But I think this is just a simple way to show unified support for all the people who are bearing the brunt
right.
of this crisis. So thanks to you and to Bob and to the rest of the community for putting this together. That's been fantastic. So.
Well, again, this community has just been outstanding. The spirit here, the willingness to stand together, to help your neighbors out, yeah. it's just incredible.
And I can't wait to go back to the stadium and see it. I haven't been there in about 2 weeks. I went by there just to take a drive. I haven't been inside since we got told in March. But from the videos that I see and the drone shots, it is just a spectacular facility.
It is. Cookie, I was over there just last week, and it is just amazing.
Oh, and then you look at the weather right now, I'm like, wow, this is perfect baseball weather.
You should be hearing that play ball.
I know. Absolutely. And you and I both, I mean, you were in Port Charlotte, and I was in New Orleans, and you know, the weather there sometimes can be a little touch and go, but wow, this weather has just been spectacular. I got a feeling, hopefully, that soon enough, you know, we'll be hearing those words pretty soon.
Oh, so. I am so sure. I am the eternal optimist, let me tell you. And
absolutely. Thank you. Thank
can't
you.
Because
you really get it. If you don't know, Annie gets us through, like, even when we're, she's got a great smile and she always looks the positive and makes us feel great. Annie, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. I really appreciate it. We really appreciate it.
Thanks,
and,
Cookie.
What we'll do is, folks, you know, just, we can't wait to be with you. And the city is blessed to have a person like Annie who has the biggest heart on our staff. So Annie, thanks again. And we appreciate it. And we'll be right back to wrap up the show. Thanks.
Thanks, Cookie.
Thanks again for tuning in to Surge Baseball and Beyond. If you want to send us your questions, you can do so. Just send it to us. You can send it to me on Twitter at @TheCookieRojas, or you can send it to my co-host, Tim Grubbs, at Mr. Tim Grubbs on Twitter, and we'll read your questions on the next episode. Thanks again, and have a great day. And everyone, please be safe.